It's Friday afternoon and time to check in on Doc's threatened species ambassador. Makes you sound a bit like an invalid, doesn't it? It's chicken. How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks, Jessie.
Are they feeding you enough food?
And probably too much. I'm very well because I just had a holiday.
Same.
Yeah, snap.
Yeah, we both went to the Gold Coast.
We did. I actually have like this kind of little bit highbrow aversion to family holidays on the Gold Coast, but then my best mate moved to Coolangatta, so that was us.
Yeah, but there is some cool stuff. There's loads of these theme parks, which is right up some people's alley, and there's the beach. But then, I don't know, did you get to Currumbin Wildlife Sanctuary? It probably would have felt like a busman's holiday.
No, of course we went to Currumbin Wildlife Sanctuary. Had a ball there.
Yeah.
I would say, though, that my six-year-old has just kind of, after 5 years of just nothing but Thomas the Tank Engine, he's switched to dinosaurs. And so he's kind of interested in the natural world at the moment. But his three favourite animals that he saw in Australia were the ibis, which the Aussies call bin chickens.
Yeah.
And the brush turkey, which you see everywhere, and the water dragon, the lizard that you just see all over the footpaths. I could have not gone to Currumbin and still ticked all his boxes.
Yeah,
it was pretty neat.
It was really interesting for me, and I'm sure it was for you to compare our relative countries when it comes to sort of wildlife and conservation. It's impossible not to, isn't it? Can I say on behalf of the Aussies, one thing I really think they've got right, and this is just my observations, just anecdotal, but They really seem to protect the vegetation around their beaches. Quite often there's beach and then there's a strip of protected, fenced off sort of bush and scrub and then a footpath. And that seems quite progressive to me.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if I think about my time over there and other visits to Aussie, they do live within their environment, even in an urban area, far more than we do. We kind of just blitz everything down to ground zero, nothing, and then plant a couple of cabbage trees and think we've done a good job.
Yeah.
But the Aussies do seem to live within their environment, and so they, you know, they are used to being surrounded by cockatoos and fruit bats. And the only snake we found, which provided, you know, half an hour of entertainment for my son, was a tiny little snake that it had its head bitten off by a fox, which are one of the introduced predators. So, had to poke that with a stick for about 10 minutes. I thought that was pretty neat.
So I went into the hinterland after being on the coast, on the Gold Coast. So I went into, what's it called, Lamington National Park. So really got up close with some birds. And I was chatting to a birder there, and I said, why don't you guys have the same problems with rats that we do? You know, we get a lot of our young birds and birds' eggs eaten by rats, and you guys have got rats. And, of course, you probably know the answer to this, Nicola.
Well, I'm guessing that it's because they have native rats, right? So all their wildlife evolved together. So the birds will have evolved strategies to deal with the rats.
That was my guess, but there's another even more obvious thing, which is that the rats get eaten by snakes over there.
Ah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Snakes love eating rats. And so you can't be just a standard rat wandering around eating birds because you've got to protect yourself.
Well, you know, this just feels like how we've done
right
control in New Zealand. Let's
bring in
the snakes.
That's where I'm getting to. We'll introduce a few snakes. They'll take care of the rats and no more problems.
Everything will be fine. What could possibly go wrong?
Now, we introduced the ferrets to get rid of the rabbits, didn't we?
Yes, we did. We introduced ferrets, weasels, and stoats. No, in fact, old Richard Henry, we've talked about him before, one of my favourite heroes, first ranger in New Zealand, his diaries document that in 7 years that he was sort of living in Glenorchy as a kind of bushman before he was a ranger, he watched the stoats and ferrets and weasels take out every kiwi and kakapo that was still living around there. Yeah, so no, that did not go well.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, I'll leave my snakes idea with MPI. We'll see what they make of it.
Yes. And on that note, be very careful what you bring back into the country because, you know, got to be a bit careful with things like, you know, they sell things like kangaroo jerky and crocodile jerky in the shops.
I managed to get my kefir, milk kefir crystals through, which is an interesting conversation at Auckland Airport at 1 a.m. in the morning. So what is this? It's a symbiotic colony of bacteria and yeast that, when added to milk, creates a probiotic. Oh, never mind.
A little bag of crystals. Yeah. Sure, that went down really well.
Yeah. Hey, so we are on the beach, or actually into the water this week with Credit of the Week, Nicola.
Yes, we are. So it's getting to that time of year again. I have to say, having kind of gone over to the Gold Coast and warmed up a little bit and then come home and realised that the temperatures were getting warmer, it made me very excited. Very excited to go camping and dust off the caravan and go snorkeling.
Oh, cool. Yeah, great.
And so this week we're going to talk about the kina, or the New Zealand sea urchin. It's not threatened, so it's one of those sneaky ones that we kind of occasionally throw into the mix, but it's a very important species in New Zealand for all kinds of reasons, including particularly for Māori, who have always eaten it, but it's a really important species because it demonstrates the significance of balance in our ecosystems and what happens if you take too many of something and the consequences for the environment, because kina can turn into like a marauding herd of underwater buffalo and wipe out entire environments if they're not kept under control.
Yes, and the problem here, of course, is people farming, or not farming, people taking crayfish, right?
Yeah, so kina are a herbivore, and they're essentially, if you can't think of what I'm talking about when you hear me talking about kina, I'm sure most New Zealanders do, it's the little thing that lives in the water that looks like a hedgehog.
In my school, if you got a haircut and people want to make fun of you, they'd say, "Kina help you."
Oh, really?
That would be as if your hair resembled a kina.
Very good.
That's Hamilton for you.
I didn't like to say. So they generally live down to about 15 metres under the water, and they're herbivores, and so they're actually very closely, they're echinoderms, so that's the same family that starfish are in, and also sea cucumbers, which is kind of interesting because starfish are one of their predators. And so what kina do is they kind of rumble along on the floor, on the rocky kind of wave-swept, near the, not quite in the intertidal zone, but under the water. So if you're snorkeling, you'll be used to seeing kina around. And they're obviously very well protected with those spines, and they're sort of picking up food with those spines. And you'll see the little tube feet popping out of the spines and from in between them and passing the food down to their mouth.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I've never thought about this, but never thought of a kina as having a mouth.
Yeah, well, in fact, the reason that we know these things are related to sea stars or starfish is that echinoderms are animals that are, so most animals are bilaterally divided, right? So they look the same from one side to the other. Mm-hmm. These are radially symmetrical, so they're generally in five bits. And so underneath the kina, there's a five-sided organ called Aristotle's lantern. And basically, which I think is beautiful, and it's essentially little jaws and teeth which grind up the food as they're cruising along eating all the seaweed. So, really cool creature. I see them often because my husband loves to eat kina, but he doesn't like to wait for his food. So, for him, kina is fast food. So, if we're out snorkeling and he sees one, he just opens it there and just chomps on it with his head above the waves and just like black juice full of it. It's gross.
Have you? Yeah. What do you make of the toast?
I've had it once, and I get it, because it's the roe, right? It's actually the gonads of the kina that people consider a delicacy. And it's very, you can tell it comes from the ocean. It's very salty.
Maybe a little bit sort of eggy, sulfurous.
Yeah, a little bit that. So I get it, but I wouldn't necessarily be choosing to put it in the sandwiches.
Kina on sushi is quite a nice idea. You get a block of warm rice and then have that on top, and it sort of mollifies the flavour a wee bit.
I'll work on that. See, the thing is, I'd never get that over the line with my husband, because the minute he found a kina, it's in his gob. There's no There's just no in between.
It's so rare on Critter of the Week that we get to share recipes as part of the conversation.
I know. anyway,
but it sounds like we've got too many of these things. You're doing the world a favour if you eat one.
It depends where you are, but that's entirely true. When you have less predators, and so in the North Island...
Fewer predators, Nicola.
Oh, so I beg your pardon.
I'm just jumping in before the text messages start washing in, yeah.
Well, funny, because remember a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about a spider and I had written about it and put the post up on my Facebook page and said, you know, this poisonous spider, and I got slammed by listeners.
Oh,
and like,
yeah.
It's venomous, not poisonous.
Yeah.
And so this morning I said to my six-year-old, we were talking about the snake that he held at Currumbin Wildlife Sanctuary, which was a little python, and I said, but the lady, she also had some poisonous snakes, didn't she? And he went, venomous, Mum.
Yeah, wow. They pick it up. Well, we went to... sea life on the Sunshine Coast, and they've got some really good messaging in there about plastics and the impact of plastics and, you know, fish eating microplastics. And then, so next time I tried to give Daisy a fish burger, she was like, well, I can't eat fish, they've got microplastics. I'm like, well, I don't know what to say to you, you're probably right.
Yeah, I think there was some pretty impressive research that came out a couple of months ago that said that due to the amount of microplastics in food, predominantly fish, but generally food, we're eating a credit card's worth of plastic a week.
Oh, my gosh.
Terrifying, isn't it?
Yeah.
Must fix that.
Well, it's terrifying how small it is, right? If it's small enough that you can't see it, what's it going to be doing in our bodies anyway?
Anyway, back to the kinner. So when I said earlier that they are like a marauding, they're like a herd of cows or buffaloes. So if they're not getting picked off by snapper or crayfish, which are their kind of major predators, because, you know, we're taking too many snapper and crayfish, what happens is the kinner kind of just explode and you see the entire ocean floor where they live just covered in kinner, and they can wipe out entire kelp forests, so giant kelp forests, like within days. And what that then means is, you know, if you think about forests, they're incredibly important habitat for a range of, you know, animal and plant diversity. And so all of a sudden the habitat's gone and you've created these barrens or these deserts under the water. So the idea is you want to make sure that your apex predators, so, you know, in the savannah that's a lion, and in the ocean in this instance it's a crayfish, that you've got enough of them that they are taking out enough and keeping the ecosystem balanced, otherwise everything goes bad. I found some really interesting stuff from the Tapitiranga Marine Reserve, Friends of Tapitiranga Marine Reserve in Wellington, and they did a very cool experiment with kinner, where they were getting too many kinner in one place, and so they had the divers just taking out enough kinner, not all of them, just enough, and moving them into a place where there was an invasive seaweed, and letting them hammer the invasive seaweed and letting the habitat where the kinner had been having a bad impact on it restore, which I thought was really neat.
Can you please rate the attractiveness of the kinner on a scale of 1 to 10?
Well, if we were talking about taste attractiveness, I'd have to go into negative numbers, because we have tried to sell these to the Asian market, particularly Japan, and they think that they are too bitter for their tastes. So a kinner shell that a kinner has lived in, I love those. My nana always had them on her windowsill. I've never found one without breaking it. If anyone wants to send me one, I'd think that was great. But a kinner looks like a hedgehog, really, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's not real flash, so let's give it a 3.
I thought you might go, but I think of it more of as a Christmas decoration.
You're right. It's no peacock, is it?
I'd be a bit disappointed by a 3 if I was a kinner listening to the radio right now. But you're the boss.
We can't all be winners, Jesse.
Okay. Hey, speaking of which, you will be a loser if you don't buy your Critter of the Week T-shirt by this time next week. It's the deadline. It's the last opportunity for you to order one. So if you haven't got your particular Critter of the Week, favourite Critter T-shirt, there's a link on our website. Go get one. It's the coolest item of clothing in town.
There has been a huge flurry of activity in my office this week while people are furiously trying to order theirs, so get in quick.
Great. Nice to chat to you, Nicola. Catch you next week.
Thanks, Jesse.